baby, don't love you. Kind of a drag when you know she's been untrue.
To PMPnetwork.com, those familiar sounds of one of the best bands of the 70s. In fact, by many believed to be the most played band in the 1970s and most listened to band on the radio. And songs like Kind of a Drag and Susan and Don't You Care and Mercy, Mercy, Mercy and Hey Baby, they play on a song. Some great music which stands up to the test of time. With us right now, joining us live is Carl Giammarese. Carl is, of course, the guitarist and a vocalist with the Buckinghams and joins us right now. How are you, Carl?
Real good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. In 1965, when you guys were just five young kids from Chicago forming a band, What was the reason for the band being formed, and how long did it take for it to really click?
Well, you know, it clicked pretty quick, but, you know, we got together basically just, you know, we were, you know, inspired just like everybody else by the Beatles and, you know, listening to their music. And you know, we formed... you know, actually myself and one other guy was in another group in Chicago and some other guys were in another band, and we eventually all got together and formed one group. And at the beginning, we weren't even called the Buckinghams. We were called the Pulsations, believe it or not.
The Pulsations. That's a 60s name.
You know. Yeah. It was, you know, I mean, it was contemporary for the time, you know. But we soon changed it to the Buckinghams after that.
Now, when you were the Pulsations, were you doing the same kind of songs? Were you guys doing original material, or were you doing mostly like Beatles covers?
No, we were doing a lot of cover material. We were covering the Beatles. And, of course, we were doing a lot of soul music, too. You know, a lot of James Brown and Wilson Pickett. And,
yeah.
You know, we were really into that kind of sound, along with the Beatles. And then, you know, the whole British invasion. And we started doing Holly songs and... the Zombies and, you know, and a lot of Beatles. But we were basically a cover band. We weren't, none of us were writing music at the time. And you know, we were playing a lot of, you know, small clubs and a lot of teen clubs and dances. Dances were the big thing in the middle 60s, you know.
So who was writing some of these songs that became hits? Did you guys eventually sit down and start writing, or were you getting them from someone else?
Well, eventually... what happened was, you know, just to back up here, we won an audition on a TV show in Chicago, a local uh, TV show called All Time Hits. It was a variety show, and it was regional syndicated show. And they're the ones that changed our name to the Buckinghams.
Oh.
They wanted something that sounded more British. The British invasion was happening. So we started doing the show. I think we might have done one episode as the Pulsations, and then we were the Buckinghams all of a sudden. And, you know, our place on the show was to cover whatever the current top 40 hit was in the pop music, you know, rock.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were doing that show for about 13 weeks, and then what happened was our manager got us a deal with USA Records, a Chicago-based record company. And so then as soon as that happened, and we had such a strong following in Chicago because we had been playing all over the Chicago market and doing that TV show. So we were looking for material, and we tried. We did have a few local hits with cover songs. You know, we did a cover of James Brown's song, I'll Go Crazy, and the Beatles' I Call Your Name. We did a Hollies tune, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, our manager, Carl Bonifetti, he approached a guy in the city here in Chicago who is a songwriter who played in another band. He played in a big show band called The Mob, and but he was writing songs too, and his name was Jim Holvey. And so he approached Jimmy about giving us some original material, and he finally wrote a tune and put it on a reel-to-reel tape for us, and, you know, we listened to it and said, wow, it's kind of a catchy tune. You know, we're not sure if it was a hit or not, but it sounded catchy. And we went into the studio, and the guy producing us, along with Bonifetti, this guy Dan Belloc, had this idea for using a horn arrangement to it, because we had been experimenting with horns at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we recorded the song and thought it sounded pretty catchy, and of course, that song was kind of a drag.
It's interesting. I remember that. In fact, I'm one of the people who bought the single on USA Records. And I remember when that came up, because it was USA was not a huge label, but yet Kind of a Drag was so catchy that it knocked the I'm a Believer by the Monkees, which was perennially number one, right out of that spot.
Right. Knocked it right off the number one spot. And whenever I run into Davy Jones, which we do dates together occasionally, I always make sure that he's aware of that. You
know? Well, that song was number one for 2 weeks in the winter of 1967.
Right, and that's basically the tune that got it all started for us. And, you know, and everything I just explained is a story that the whole thing happened within a 6-7 month period, you know.
Yeah, but then right after that, you guys ended up on Columbia. What happened there?
Well, we, you know, our contract had expired, too, with USA, and, of course, after Kind of a Drag, they, of course, wanted to re-sign us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we were in a position to basically to sign with anybody at that point. And we realized, I mean, we were a bunch of kids that didn't know a lot about the business, but we were smart enough to realize that if we were going to continue the string of hit records, that we got lucky with Kind of a Drag. It was luck, and it was a great song, but, you know, it was still a lucky break for us. And we knew we needed a real label and you know, stronger management and, you know, just to continue this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we wound up finding a new manager. His name was James William Guercio, and he was originally from Chicago, lived out in L.A., and he had been working with a duo called Chad and Jeremy for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But he seemed to know the right things to do, and he was a musical genius as far as his ability to as a musician and as a producer. So we went with him, and he immediately signed us with Columbia Records. He thought that was the right label for us, and
he was right.
And he was right. You know, it was 67, beginning of 67, and, you know, Kind of a Drag was the number one record, and here I was in New York City signing with Columbia Records, and, you know, we were on top of the world.
And in April, you were on top again with Don't You Care, and then in July it was Mercy Mercy, September Hey Baby, and December Susan. It was an unbelievable year.
Right. It just, you know, it was just one after, and those were the days when you used to kick those hits out one after another. You know, they used to release songs pretty quickly, you know, in the 4-month period. You know, so that was, and what happened too was, except for Mercy, 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 that was a song that was, it was originally a hit by Cannonball Adderley,
right.
Instrumental, and his keyboard player, Solinal, wrote it, and we just turned it into a little more pop R&B tune with lyrics, and wound up getting an even bigger hit with it.
Yeah, Cannonball's was on Capitol Records in the earlier 60s.
Right. Yeah. But Jim Holvey wrote all the other tunes that we had hits with, except for our last song. You know, he wrote, of course, Don't You Care, Hey Baby, They're Playing Our Song, Susan, you know, Ain't Kind of a Drag. And the last song we had a hit with really was Back in Love Again. It didn't do quite as well, but that was written by our keyboard player, Marty. But, yeah, it was a great time, and it was exciting, and things were moving real fast, and we were touring a lot. I mean, we didn't have much time to think about anything because we were out there playing constantly.
But, I mean, you must have thought, I mean, here you guys went from nothing to the top of the charts, and in fact, Billboard's number one most listened to band in 1967. Did it affect you guys? Was there an ego problem? Did it, you know, does it get to your head?
Well, I don't think it did because, like I said, we were so busy, the label and our management and the touring, it kept us so busy that we didn't really have much time to think about it and let it go to our heads. And, you know, we were doing some of the best TV shows at the time. You know, we were making appearances on the Smothers Brothers show. Jerry Lewis had a show. We were on the Tonight Show, and of course Ed Sullivan, which was the big one at the time. And I don't think it really was an ego thing. You know, I think we all experienced some of our friends and family might have treated us a little different after that because they thought of us as being, you know, the big stars now. You know, but we didn't really think about it. You know.
Yeah.
And I think it would have affected us more was years later when the bubble burst and we weren't doing it, you know. And,
yeah, well, that's what I was going to talk about, because at 65, here you guys were five kids, you know, the Pulsations. A couple of years later, you're at the top of the heap. A couple of years later, you guys break up.
Right.
What was it in 1969 that caused that breakup?
Well, we were actually together from 65, and we stayed together touring and playing until the beginning of 1970. So we were, you know, the hits ended right around after the beginning of 68, you know, and I think Susan overlapped a little bit into that, and we toured in 68 and played, you know, toured in 69, and then, so it was almost 5 years that we stayed together, you know, when you're 18, 19, 20 years old, you think it's going to last forever, and you don't think about the future too much either, you know. And when I look at why we broke up, I really can't put my finger on one exact thing that did it for us. There were several things. You know, there was the music part of our hands were tied because Columbia Records wanted to hear Kind of a Drag over and over again. And that sound, and we were finally starting to expand musically and wanted to experiment more and do something different. So our hands were tied and we couldn't do what we wanted to do as the Buckinghams. And then we had a falling out with our manager, Jim Gersio. We started to realize how important publishing and writing was, and that's where all the big money was. And he was... and he had it all, you know. He was controlling that, and he had promised when we did our last album with him, which was an album called Portraits, he had promised to share that with us, and then he didn't. And so we wound up firing him, and which in some ways we had no choice, but in other ways it hurt us because he was our link to the label, and he was our producer, and I don't think Columbia really did a good job of connecting us with another producer after that. I think we had few producers that just didn't know what to do with us, and you know. And then, of course, the music scene was changing drastically. You know, there was a heavier, more underground sound coming in, and all of a sudden, everybody was listening to Cream and Janis Joplin and
Jimi Hendrix,
you know,
and all
Santana,
those
and yeah. Columbia was signing all these acts, and groups like us and the Association and the Beach Boys, and you know, were kind of being left behind a little bit at that point. So there was just a combination of a lot of things, and then Dennis Tufano, you know, the other original member of the band, mm-hmm. singer, him and I wanted to, we were really starting to write a lot, and we wanted to form a duo and do some new music. So it all just came to an end about 1970, and everybody kind of went their own way. And our original keyboard player, Marty Greb, he went to, he did play with Leon Russell for a while, and with Chicago and Bonnie Raitt, and you know, he kind of, you know, moved around. And
you mentioned Chicago. That's where Jim later
worked
with
Jim
them, right?
Jim went on. We introduced him to the guys in Chicago because we were good friends with them, and we knew them a long time, and introduced him to them. And so he went on to produce and manage them for a while after he left us, you know. Mm. And, you know, the Chicago sound, if you listen to our last album with Curcio and Chicago's first album, a lot of it, the sound of it sounds like a continuation.
You were right. I was noticing that. It's very interesting you mentioned that, because I never noticed how pronounced the horns were in some of these songs until I listened. It's really great that Sundays has put out the original stuff, like kind of a drag album. And also,
really?
Time and Charges and Portraits are on one CD with Sundays. It's a great CD.
It sure is.
And that has, you can tell the Chicago sound coming out on it.
Yeah, first of all, they did a great job of remastering it. It sounds fabulous. And then the packaging is very unique. And, it, you know, when I first opened that, when they sent me the CDs and first opened them up, and even the photos in there, there were just shots of us in the studio back, you know, photos that I don't even remember, you know. And it was a real treat for me because, you know, and it was well written. They just did a great job of putting that together, and you know, that's it's a great thing that you know, it almost feels like having a hit all over again. You know.
Well, it's nice. Sundays released all three of the all the Buckingham stuff is on three different CDs, and Legacy from Sony also has the Greatest Hits CD, which is a real nice package as well.
Right, the Greatest Hits and the Mercy, Mercy, Mercy CD is a real nice package because it's got, it must have about, gosh, I don't know how many tunes, you know, 20 songs on it.
Mm.
There's even a few obscure songs on there that were never really released back then, and they took them out of the can and put them on there, and it's kind of interesting.
Mm. Now, a whole new generation of people are listening on oldies radio and some of the stations and hearing these songs for the first time and becoming Buckingham's fans. When you're doing concerts, and I know you're doing some, is the crowd really mixed in age, or are they mostly older?
Well, of course, it depends on what kind of venue we're playing, but it is quite often a very mixed bag of people. You know, you have your diehard fans, which thank God we have them. They're the ones that keep us going, and because they're still listening to oldies radio and coming out to the shows, it just, you know, it gave us a career, so that's fabulous, you know.
Right.
But then you have a younger generation. You know, I see a lot of kids that were turned on by their parents and whatever. For some reason, they're into oldies radio, and they come out to the shows, and this is all new music to them, you know.
Right.
They're really, you know, you mostly see this when we do the fairs and festivals.
Do you find that, at least maybe it's an age thing, I don't know, but I'm looking around and I'm looking at the music of the mid-50s to the early, excuse me, mid-60s to the early 70s, and I just see an incredible gift of great music at that point. And nowadays, I think that's the reason why the kids are listening to oldies and watching, like, Nickelodeon for mm-hmm. TV, because they're looking at you know, Nick at Night, at some of the old classic TV shows as well. Maybe the things that were done years ago were just superior to what's out now.
Well, you know, I like to think that, but I you know, I won't put down all the music today, that's for sure, because I'll tell you, there's a lot of great artists that I think are making fabulous music, you know. You look at some of these groups, Counting Crows or Vertical Horizon or Matchbox 20. And, you know, there's some great bands.
Yeah,
they're doing some great songs, really melodic. Some of the artists, my favorite is Sarah McLachlan.
Mm-hmm. Then you have people like Eminem selling millions of albums and getting a Grammy nomination, and I just can't figure it out myself.
Well, you know, there's something there. I mean, the kids are buying it, you know. But the songs we did, there was a certain, they were very melodic and very, and we had such a great audience connecting with the songs, the things we had to say in the 60s and those tunes. The tunes were just had so much substance to them. And also music back then was pretty much the conscience of the country. Of the world, you know what I mean?
That's true.
People were connecting
absolutely
more. Nowadays, it's more. It's just entertainment. Okay.
60s, you know? We had the anti-war sentiment going on,
right?
Against
and,
the Vietnam
and
War,
it was just a
civil rights
different thing.
Yeah,
but you know, but one thing I have to say, I think that kids today, their music, I think they connect more with our music from the 60s too, because you listen to the bands today, and they're kind of 4 or 5 piece bands that had a garage band sound. They started that way. We did too, so they can make that connection. And there is, you can see the, you can go from us to them and see the development, you know, through the years. And so we are connected more. When I was starting in the 60s, we didn't connect that way with our parents' music, because they were coming from the big band, swing band era, you know.
Yeah.
Listening to Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller, and you know, so there wasn't that connection, you know, that wasn't going on.
Well, look at, I mean, the first thing I look at is, I have 2 young children, is the Beatles album, number one there.
Right.
Was the top album of on the charts.
Now, that's exciting.
It is so cool, you know?
It is so great to see that album. They sold more of those than they ever sold the Beatle records in the 60s.
Yeah, I find that amazing. And all these kids in our neighborhood, you know, talking about new bands like the Doors, and I'm like laughing hysterically. It's new to them, but it isn't new, that's for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it is. that's a real tribute to what we were doing back then, because that music was able to stand up and last, and you know, people today listen to it and go, hey, that had something. You know, maybe technology wise, it wasn't recorded the best way because we didn't have the technology they have today, but you know, we're in the digital age, we didn't have that, but the song still came across, you know. There was a certain feeling, and they were saying a certain thing, and it was great music.
I saw you folks in 1985 during the Happy Together tour.
Oh, yeah.
That was a great tour, with the Grassroots.
Yeah, where did you see us?
I'm not sure which one of the circus tents, you know, that you were in. I'm not sure which one it was, because I've seen so many of these things. But I remember the Turtles were there and the Grassroots and Gary Lewis, who sounded the same, but his band was pretty bad at the time.
Uh-huh.
But now, who are you touring with? Are you touring with any of the originals? Is Nick still in the band?
Yes, Nick Fortuna is still with me, and he's been with me since we started back with the Buckinghams, you know. We got back together in 1980, actually. Not full-time, but we got back together because of, you know, we were requested by the program director, John Guerin from WLS, got us to play at Chicago Fest as a reunion. And it was me, Nick Fortuna, and Dennis Tufano at the time. And for a few years there, we would do a select number of dates every year, you know. And then we started to take it seriously around 1984, and got an agent and started going out and playing. And at that point, Dennis decided he didn't want to go out on the road and play. And so Nick and I just continued on alone, and got some other members. And, you know, and I was a little nervous at the time about doing it, because, you know, you'd like to have as much originality in the band as you can.
Sure.
And
two is better than the usual.
Pardon me?
Two is better than the usual. Most bands have one, so.
Well, you know, we soon found out, too, that people just wanted to hear those great songs again and done in the original way they were done. And it all worked out, you know. So by 85, when we got the offer to do the Happy Together tour, it was exciting to go out and play that many dates, but I don't know if I could do that again, because that was a bus tour playing. You know, would we do about 200 dates in 7 months?
So you're touring again now. Who are you touring with at this point? Coming
well,
up this year?
Well, what we've, of course, you know, we do through the course of the year now. I mean, we've got a great band right now. I've had the same three guys with Nick and I for over 15 years now. You know, we got Tom Sheckle on the drums. We've got Bruce Soboroff on keyboards. Bob Abrams on guitar, and everybody sings, and it's a great band, and we do a lot of dates. I have a three-piece horn section that a lot of the dates we do, not every one of them, but we use the horn section, and we do about, 80 to 100 dates a year, and we do everything. I mean, one night we could be doing a fair somewhere or a festival, and then we could be doing a few days at a casino. We do a lot of private dates for different corporations and private parties also. We're pretty much doing a lot of different, it's pretty diversified. Like this coming weekend, we're playing a supper club in Altamonte Springs, Florida, near Orlando. That's where we'll be. But through the course of this whole year, this year, we will be doing a package tour on and off. Throughout the year with Tommy James.
Tommy's a great guy. He's a really nice guy.
Right.
Been on the show three or four
times.
He sure
is, and it's great to be working with him. Right now we've got about maybe 10 or 15 dates together, but it'll be Tommy James, and then sometimes the Turtles or the Grassroots will join us, Gary Puckett.
Now, with the Grassroots, I actually had the pleasure of introducing Rob Grill in the Grassroots. Is that the Grassroots that you're touring with? Is it Rob Grill's version of it?
Yes, it is. It is Rob Grill.
Because I think Warren Etten is running with some, too.
Yeah, we all have the same agent. You know, we're all with Paradise Artists.
Right.
And
folks out there that want a book, you guys can go to ParadiseArtists.com.
Right. Paradise Artists, or you know, you can go to their website, which is ParadiseArtists.com.
Yeah, and folks out there who want to get the schedule, because if you want, I know they're coming to Boston and all over the country, folks, wherever you are listening.
Right.
It's at Buckinghams.com, and you can get the schedule up there, too.
Right. Yeah, we will be in the Boston area, and I'm pretty sure that's in September. You know, I don't have it in front of me right now.
Well, I'm looking to it. I will be there.
Great.
I will be there, and we'll bring all our listeners down there to come see you.
Well, that's great. I mean, we are on the East Coast, too, like in, Camden, New Jersey, on August 19th. This is with the tour with Tommy James.
And for people out there who think that you're just playing your oldies but goodies, which you're playing a lot of, obviously you have a lot of hits, but you have a pretty new album called Terra Firma out, right?
Yes, we have about a year and a half ago, we did something new. Somebody approached me, a small independent label in Chicago called Nation Records, and this guy, Phil Vaughn, who's the president of that, wanted us to record again, do something new. And I had a lot of songs that, I'm a songwriter, and I'm always constantly in the studio and trying to play songs with people and do, different stuff. So I had a whole collection of tunes, and we picked what I thought was the best tunes, and I worked with it and co-produced it with my keyboard player, Bruce Soboroff, and did a couple of his songs on there also. And we didn't try to recreate the old Buckingham sound. What we did was we just decided to take each song individually and treat it the way we thought it should be. And what we came up with was it's a pretty eclectic album of songs because, you have, some horn tunes on there where you got a strong backbeat and a good horn sound to it, which is a little closer to the original Buckinghams. But then there's some songs that are a little more acoustic and a little more alternative, I guess you'd have to say, sounding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all original tunes except for we did do a cover version of an old Billy Joe Royal tune called I Knew You When. And it's a ballad, and we do that in the show now. And I try to do at least a couple songs off that album just to do something new and fresh in the show.
Sure.
I don't like to try to, force it on the audience too much original material within a show because, I've experienced myself. I've gone to, say, a a Rolling Stones concert, and I want to hear Satisfaction and all those great old tunes, and they'll be doing stuff off a new album throughout the whole show, a lot of it, and yeah. You know, it's a little disappointing. Mm. And so I know how the audience feels. They want to hear, you know, so most of our show is pretty high energy, us doing all the hits with maybe a couple of our old album cuts on there too. And then we do some cover versions of music from the same time that we liked. You know, we do a great Beatle medley. We do a little tribute to the Happy Together tour that we were a part of and things like that, you know, along with, you know, a couple tunes from that new album. But it was a great experience to do that album, and it was great to get back in the mainstream again and see if we could get something happening with it. But we did find out how difficult it is to be one of the old bands trying to make new music and trying to get program directors and radio stations who are run by a lot of very young people who don't go back with us, you know, trying to get them to program it and play it, you know.
Now, the Buckinghams.com, they can order it there?
Yes, they can.
Yeah. You know, what I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Internet. What do you think of Napster and the whole controversy surrounding it?
Well, you know what? I'm in favor of you know, I don't like the idea of free music like that. I'm in favor of them coming up with a system. I think it's a wonderful tool because, believe me, technology is a great thing, and I certainly am very much into my computer and the Internet and using it all the time. I just don't think that the music should be free. There should be some kind of a system where they're paying for the music, so the artists, the writers and publishers and the record companies are being compensated. That's only right. But, you know, I think it needs to be worked out. It should be something that's definitely a lot better deal than somebody going out to the store and buying a CD. You know, they shouldn't pay those kind of prices. It should be really reasonable. But it should be, there should be a system for it. It should be worked out so that there is, they are paying and the artists and record companies are being compensated. That's, you know, that's only fair.
I think that
an artist, a recording artist and a writer and a, you know, publisher myself, I mean, how else can I think, you know?
I just think that the record companies got a little bit greedy and started putting their prices way, way too high.
Right. I think CDs are too expensive in the store, and I think, you know, a lot of kids can't afford it, and this is an opportunity. I sympathize with them. It's an opportunity to trade music and to get especially current stuff that that they can't afford to buy. So, that, you know, the record companies... you know, I don't know. I don't know what to think. I think eventually something's going to change, and maybe all music will be, you know, purchased off the internet or
possible. I just remember when we were kids. You know, $2 an album, and 35-40 cents a single, and we were able to afford it. And nowadays the kids, you know, if they made album CDs $9.99 and actually pushed the CD singles for a buck or two, they would be selling a lot more. And
yeah.
They make more money that way.
Right.
But, you know, it's short-sighted.
You know, it is greed, and, you know, it's just like everything else, it's very expensive, and that's why people have turned to Napster. And, you know, but I don't know. They got to find the balance there, you know.
Now, Kyle, when they're at their concerts and seeing the Buckinghams, what are you guys selling your CDs for at the concerts?
Oh, about $80 a piece. well, it depends. You know, we sell them at shows, you know, $10, $15, $20 a piece, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little different at the show because what we're doing is, you know, in the heat of doing a concert, and we also, you know, we always sign autographs after the show. So we're, for whatever merchandise they purchase, they're getting to meet the artists, they're getting to get autographs.
That's where they're right there.
We're very personable, and we are out there with them. So, it becomes a whole night for them.
Right.
People get caught up in the moment, you know.
Well, an autographed CD certainly has value other than going onto the store and paying $18
right.
for one with no connection to the artist whatsoever except giving them the money.
Right. I think we sell photographs for, a couple dollars a piece or whatever.
Hmm.
But
Well, I'll tell you guys... warm in my heart. I always loved the Buckingham, still do the music. When I was listening to the CDs that came, brought it all back again. And Kyle Giammarese, my guest here from the Buckinghams. You can see them in a town near you. Just go log on to thebuckinghams.com, and you'll find their schedule, and also paradiseartist.com if you want to book them somewhere where you are, possibly book the whole tour. They have a lot of different artists. It's amazing who's available to tour right now.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a lot of and a lot of the original artists too. You know?
I know we have a lot of them on our show, and it's a lot of fun to talk to the folks and to know that the music is still coming out. So folks who want some new fresh music can get a copy of Terra Firma, and if you want to get some of the stuff that was done years ago, then you can get some of the greatest hits albums that are out from Sundazed and Legacy and some of the other labels.
Right, it's great that music is still available on CD. You know.
Absolutely. And it's better now, too. The quality is much better as
right.
well.
Right. Sure is.
Which is kind of nice. I was playing some of my Scratch 45. I actually found my kind of a drag on USA single. It's not exactly air playable right now.
Yeah, well, you get all those pops and crackles and, you know, on those old records, you know. And
I still have them all. I don't know if they're worth anything or not, but it might be worth something because the USA is kind of a...
Well, yeah, they are. I've been to a few of these record shows, and they do, if they're in good condition, they can bring in a few dollars, you know.
Mm.
But, well, we're just grateful to still be, you know, out here doing this and still have an audience that wants to hear our music. That's really special. You know, if somebody would have said to me back in the 60s, hey, where are you going to be in 2000, you know, you're going to still be, I would have never said I would still be, you know, it just seemed impossible. It seemed so far away that we would still be doing this music, but here we are. And it's a testament to, what the music is, all about. And what
it just made me feel real, you made me feel real old, Carl, because I just realized that it's almost 34 years ago, today that you guys were really, you know, with kind of a drag, you know, that came on January and it was on the charts around now, 34 years ago.
I know, it's amazing. But we're still out there. Hey, we still look pretty good, you know. We're out there. We can still rock out, so.
I'm sure you can,
you
see.
Know, I'm going to do this as long as I can.
We're not getting older, we're getting better.
That's right.
Right, Kyle?
I mean,
Kyle, Giammarese from the great Buckinghams, and you can go see him at a venue near you. Just check it out at thebuckinghams.com. And I want to thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us today, Carl.
Well, I thank you, too. It was a pleasure, and really hope to see you one of these days at one of our concerts.
I'll be there.
Great.
All right.
Thank
Take
you.
Care. Bye-bye.